Hello and welcome to this week's Revisiting Old Favourites podcast in the Inner Sanctum, where we are continuing and almost concluding, but continuing our race to Rome, as it has become. It's been the path to Rome, of course, the whole time, a pilgrimage to Rome, as we read together and walk together and trudge together with Hilaire Belloc on the path to Rome, which we've been reading now for many weeks, for almost a year, 40-something weeks and counting. I think it's 45, 46 weeks and counting. Belloc's vow was to arrive in Rome by the Feast of St. Peter and Paul at the end of June. I have severe doubts of whether we are going to make it when he makes it, but we shall see. So today, as we are obviously still trudging our way down along the Apennines, we find Belloc in the dark, literally, but also perhaps in the dark night of the soul in some sense or another. So, without further ado, let's continue. Certainly these people have a benediction upon them, granted them for their simple lives and their justice. Their eyes are fearless and kindly. They are courteous, straight, and all have in them laughter and sadness. They are full of songs, of memories, of the stories of their native race, and their worship is conformable to the world that God made. May they possess their own land, and may their influence come again from Italy to save from jar and boasting and ineptitude the foolish, valourless cities and the garish crowds of shouting men. And let us especially pray that the revival of the faith may do something for our poor old universities. Already, when I had heard all these directions, they seemed to argue a longer road than I had expected. It proved interminable. It was now fully dark. The night was very cold from the height of the hills. A dense dew began to fall upon the ground, and the sky was full of stars. For hours I went on slowly down the lane that ran round the hollow of the wooded mountain, wondering why I did not reach the stream he spoke of. It was midnight when I came to the level, and yet I heard no water, and did not yet see the tower against the sky. Extreme fatigue made it impossible, as I thought, to proceed farther, when I saw a light in a window, and went to it quickly and stood beneath it. A woman from the window called me, Caro Mia. I'm going to read that again because my Italian is wrong. Excuse me, parenthesis. A woman from the window called me, Caro Mio, which was gracious, but she would not let me sleep even in the straw of the barn. I hobbled on in despair of the night, for the necessity of sleep was weighing me down after four high hills climbed that day and after the rough ways of the heat and the continual marching. I found a bridge which crossed the deep ravine they had told me of. This high bridge was new, and had been built of fine stone, yet it was broken and ruined, and a gap suddenly showed in the dark. I stepped back from it in fear. The clambering down to the stream and up again through the briars to regain the road broke me yet more, and when, on the hill beyond, I saw the tower faintly darker against the dark sky, I went up doggedly to it, fearing faintness and reaching it where it stood. Was on the highest ground overlooking the Secchia Valley. I sat down on a stone beside it and waited for the morning. The long slope of the hills fell away for miles to where by daylight would have lain the misty plain of Emilia. The darkness confused the landscape. The silence of the mountains and the awful solemnity of the place lent that vast panorama a sense of the terrible under the dizzy roof of the stars. Every now and again, some animal of the night gave a cry in the undergrowth of the valley, and the great rock of Castel Nuovo, now close and enormous, bare, rugged, a desert place, added something of doom. The hours were creeping on with the less certain stars. A very faint and unliving grey touched the edges of the clouds. The cold possessed me, and I rose to walk, if I could walk, a little farther. What is that in the mind which, after it may be a slight disappointment or a petty accident, causes it to suffer on the scale of grave things? I have waited for the dawn 100 times, attended by that mournful, colourless spirit which haunts the last hours of darkness, and influenced especially by the great timeless apathy that hangs round the first uncertain promise of increasing light. For there is an hour before daylight when men die, and when there is nothing above the soul or around it, when even the stars fail. And this long and dreadful expectation I had thought to be worse than one was alone at sea, worst when one was alone at sea in a small boat without wind, drifting beyond one's harbour in the ebb of the outer channel tide and sogging back at the first flow on the broad, confused movement of a sea without any waves. In such lonely mornings I have watched the hours light turning, and I have counted up my gulf of time and wondered that moments could be so stretched out in the clueless mind. I have prayed. I have prayed for the morning or for a little draught of wind, and this I have thought, I say, the extreme of absorption into emptiness and longing. But now, on this ridge, dragging myself on to the main road, I found a deeper abyss of isolation and despairing fatigue than I had ever known, and I came near to turning eastward and imploring the hastening of light, as men pray continually without reason for things that can but come in a due order. I still went forward a little, because when I sat down my loneliness oppressed me like a misfortune, and because my feet, going painfully and slowly, yet gave a little balance and rhythm to the movement of my mind. I heard no sound of animals or birds. I passed several fields, deserted in the half darkness, and in some I felt the hay, but always found it wringing wet with dew, nor could I discover a good shelter from the wind that blew off the upper snow of the summits. For a little space of time there fell upon me, as I crept along the road, that shadow of sleep which numbs the mind, but it could not compel me to lie down, and I accepted it only as a partial and beneficent oblivion which covered my desolation and suffering as a thin, transparent cloud might cover an evil moon. Then suddenly the sky grew lighter upon every side. That cheating gloom, which I think the clouds in purgatory must reflect, lifted from the valley as though to a slow order given by some calm and good influence that was marshalling in the day. Their colours came back to things. The trees recovered their shape, life and trembling. Here and there, on the face of the mountain opposite, the mists by their movement took part in the new life, and I thought I heard for the first time the tumbling water far below me in the ravine. That subtle barrier was drawn, which marks today from yesterday. All the night and its despondency became the past and entered memory. The road before me, the pass on my left, my last ridge and the entry into Tuscany, the mass of the great hills, had become mixed into the increasing light, that is, into the familiar and invigorating present, which I have always found capable of opening the doors of the future with a gesture of victory. My pain either left me, or I ceased to notice it, and seeing a little way before me a bank above the road and a fine grove of sparse and dominant chestnuts, I climbed up thither and turned, standing to the east. There, without any warning of colours or of the heraldry that we have in the north, the sky was a great field of pure light, and without doubt it was all woven through, as was my mind watching it, with security and gladness. Into this field, as I watched it, rose the sun. The air became warmer almost suddenly. The splendour and health of the new day left me all in repose and persuaded or compelled me to immediate sleep. I found, therefore, in the short grass and on the scented earth beneath one of my trees, a place for lying down. I stretched myself out upon it and lapsed into a profound slumber, which nothing but a vague and tenuous delight separated from complete forgetfulness. If the last confusion of thought before sleep possessed me was a kind of prayer, and certainly I was in the mood of gratitude and of adoration, this prayer was of course to God, from whom every good proceeds, but partly, idolatrously, to the sun, which, of all the things he has made, seems, of what we at least can discover, the most complete and glorious. Therefore, the first hours of the sunlight, after I had wakened, made the place like a new country, for my mind, which received it, was new. I reached Colonia before the great heat, following the fine high road that went dipping and rising again along the mountainside, and then, leaving the road and crossing the little Seccia by a bridge, a path, soon lost in a grassy slope, gave me an indication of my way. For when I had gone an hour or so upwards along the shoulder of the hill, there opened gradually before me a silent and profound vale, hung with enormous woods and sloping upwards to where it was closed by a high bank beneath and between two peaks. This bank I knew could be nothing else than the central ridge of the Apennines, the watershed, the boundary of Tuscany, and the end of all the main part of my journey. Beyond, the valleys would open on to the Tuscan plain, and at the southern limit of that, Siena was my mark. From Siena to Rome, an eager man, if he is sound, may march in 3 long days. Nor was that calculation all. The satisfaction of the last lap, of the home run, went with the word Tuscany in my mind. These cities were the approaches and introduction of the end. Wow. I am rendered almost speechless by the sheer magnificence and beauty of that prose. That made Belloc believe that he would never wrote so well again as when he wrote The Path to Rome, and certainly as regards his prose as opposed to some of his poetry, which is magnificent. I can't help when reading passages like that but to agree with him. I hope you also share my great admiration for Belloc, the writer of poetic prose of that magnificence. And on that note, we'll leave him. Just entering the final leg, the final lap of his Path to Rome, our pilgrimage with him, continuing for a little while longer. So until next week, when we return to the Path to Rome, thanks for joining me, and thanks for joining the Inner Sanctum. Until next week, goodbye and God bless.